Accession number 9346, Reel 3.
Arthur Baxter, tape 3.
Yes,
so you were in the Somme several times?
Three times. The last time we started on the 8th of August, 1918. And we pushed him back. We finished up close to Mons. So I didn't go into Mons. That's where the war started with the British. But I didn't go into Mons. But I think we were about 2 kilometres away. That's where we finished up.
Was that good when you started moving forward?
Well, that fit a treat. As Britain retiring, well, you're only allowed to use the word retire in the British Army, you know. Withdraw. Oh, yeah. Withdraw. If you want to get them guns back, you want to say retire. Withdraw.
Did you think, Arthur, when the Germans did make that thrust in March 1918... did you think the war would be lost, that we would lose the war?
Well, I'll tell you what, that was getting pretty near. He's got some men, you know, they were good trained men, you see, come from Russia. Plenty of them. Yeah. We laid in close support for about 10 days, I expect. Yeah, Australians manned a trench in front of us, Australians. They were good old boys.
You liked the Australians, did you? What did you like about them?
Well, they'd soon put a band through Jerry. They wouldn't, or give them a butt on the skull. They were good old toughens, they were. They got 6 bob a day, you know. They got 5 bob from their government and a bob from ours when we was getting 1 shilling a day.
Did that make you resentful?
Well, that made you think a little, but they were good to us. They were good to us. Never. I'll tell you what I see them do. The first time we come out of the line up at Ypres, old Sergeant Major was in a bell tent, and one of our gunners was cleaning his rifle with pull through. Well, before he done it, he pulled the trigger that was loaded, and he didn't know it. That went through his tent, what he was in, that went through the old Sergeant Major's tent just above his head. Well, he got. It'd go up. You got 14 days number one field punishment. Well, that mean being towed the wagon wheel twice a day.
Arthur's demonstrating.
Spokes behind the lock.
That
hour in the morning, hour and afternoon. Independent of fatigue work. Well, there's 2 Australians come trotting past there on horses. They rid past. One jumped off, held his handy horse, the other one, he come back and he cut them ropes, released that man. They'd do anything they would. They used to call their officers by their surname, you know. But they were real fighting men. Of course, they'd all been to the Dardanelles, you know, that's where they come from, the Dardanelles here.
Did you hear about that? About the Dardanelles?
Well, after we'd finished our training at Felixstowe, there was talk that some of us were going to the Dardanelles because there was one Suffolk battalion out there. But that, I think the time they were then and considering whether to withdraw, you see. Yeah. Do I just say if we'd have went there, that's where we should be now, I expect. We lost some men out there, you know.
When were you promoted to corporal, Arthur? When were you promoted to corporal?
Well, I can't say exactly. I hadn't been out there a great while. That's forced on me, you know. The first stripe. Oh, I might have had one in a tournament in England. I might have had one in with Suffolk, because I didn't want it. And they wouldn't force you here. Well, this. See the orders when they come out, you had the orders up, you see, you had to read them. I read them this night. I was made last corporal. Because what I should have done went to the tails, had that stripe put on before parade next morning. Because you had to be poshed up next morning, you see. Well, you did come out. Because as soon as I see me, he said, Baxter, he said, you're improperly dressed. I said, am I, sir? He said, yes. He said, did you read the orders last night? I said, no, sir. He said, well, you should have done. He said, off the tailors. And that happened 3 times, with the second one and the third.
That's how you heard of your promotion?
I didn't want it. No, I didn't want it. But I tell you, they forced on to out there. They had to, of course they did. Yeah.
Why didn't you want it, Arthur?
Hey?
Why didn't you want it?
Well, I don't know. I suppose I like... That'd be better if you moved in with strangers. I mean, you've got to be boss of your old pals, what you lived with and died with, you might say. You've got to be boss over them, you see.
Was that difficult?
Well, when I was due to come home on the mob sometime in February 1918. So this morning we was on parade and they read out about 3 or 4 of us. We had to step out the front. O'Colonel was there. When he got to me, he shook hands. He said, Sergeant Baxter, he said, they were then going to move up on the Rhine, my company was. And I thought, so, well, I had enough of it. He said, are you going home? I said, yes, sir. He said, will you do us a kindness? He said, come with us on the Rhine. I said, no, sir. Just like that. He said, got out of my hand, shook hands, said, thank you for everything you had done. He said, and I don't blame you for that. Yeah.
Before we get to the end of the war, Arthur, I think you mentioned earlier that you were at Passchendaele, is that right?
Yeah. Not the first part of the fight, but the second half.
Yeah. Could you tell us about that?
There was a big canal run right through that. That was all bombed and blown smithereens and all the water. Well, there was horses down in big shallows. Horses, they slipped in, you see. Because you couldn't tell where they were, because that was all one, you know, a coat of mud. And a horse can't breathe through the mouth. There ain't many people know that. If you see a horse at a race, you all see him, don't you, from the nose. Well, as soon as his nose is in there trying to breathe, look, he's killing himself. Many a horse and mules, and many a man are gone there in there. Well, I say hundreds, I expect, on that battlefield at night, because there's a memorial there, see, about 56 unknown graves, you see, up there. 56,000.
What were you actually doing at the Third Ypres battle? What was your task? Were you still with the water and the rations?
Everything like that. They wouldn't let me get off that. No. Now, it's all night work, you see. And I mean, you had to be on out all daylight and getting the stuff up to here, ready to go. Ready to go there, we'll say.
Mm. Wasn't that very difficult with all this water and mud?
Oh, yes. Pack mule, well, they've got pack mules. Oh, yeah. I walk in mud up that. More than that sometimes.
What sort of roads or...
Well,
cars?
They want the roads. They laid some railway sleepers. Railway sleepers, you know, big rail. And then they made little lay-by. If you was coming that way, you was nearest that lay-by first, you had to pull in there and let me pass, you see what I mean? But of course they all broke about with shell fire and all sorts of things. There's mud everywhere. And when we come out this night, took them all night to get the guns out. I got into Nissen hut. There's two Nissen huts. The whistle blew. That's what that whistle's issued for.
The little whistle you showed me. Yes.
When you hear a jerry plane there, you blow it. Well, you're a little further away, you blow it. That's, people take cover, you see. Well, I blew the whistle, and they all laid down by one man, named Laycock. He come from Bradford. Instead of him laying down beside me, he went into the hut and opened the door and stood looking out. And I dropped a bomb Well, I think about 6 yards off. I took the head off, tucked up his claims a whistle, hit him, held him back, that would hurt. He killed six in that hut, or at my hut. And I don't know how many wounded now. 6 or 7 or more. Well, the next hut, there was 28 men in there. The second bomb dropped right clean on top. And they were, a man come out there, either dead or wounded. And the set fire the blinging hut, a wooden floor. We carried them to a dressing station, and we packed up. I just got down, have a little bit of a rest. Why come an officer? He said, "Corporal, have you seen Sergeant so and so?" I forget his name now. I got wrong with those sergeant that morning because he sent me up in daylight, you see, with my men, keep his men back. I said, "No, sir." He said, "Well, come with me." He got a torch. We went round where all the horses and mules were tied. Well, that's where the third bomb dropped, amongst them. And that old sergeant lay there dead amongst them, dead horses and mules. He said, "Corporal, go and fetch a stretcher." All right, we'll fetch a stretcher. This man, well, he's no guardman, really, or 6-footer. We put him on, he's dead as a door now, of course. We put him on there, because his horse got her feet in, they went to wait there. I was the other end, and his head hung over, see, between the handles. Well, I couldn't hardly stand with that weight, and I couldn't walk with this horse stamping along. I had to ask him, "He's down." I thought I should drop down dead. I'd had about 48 hours out in the wrestler. That's just one account.
What did you think of the medical services?
Mountains.
You know, the stretcher bearers and the people in the medical service.
Oh, yeah.
Well, did they do a good job,
yeah,
do you think?
They carried wounds till they gone crazy. Had been knocked down with a butter rifle. Jeez. They have to keep going while a wound will lay, you see. And you just think it's rest. Well, you want 3 people to carry a man on a stretcher. You see, the man, the foot, he can walk in the hand, he ain't got the way. You want one outside, another one outside. You see what I mean? You can get along like that. But if there's only 2 of you, that one has got, they got the head and shoulders, you got something to do, you know. But poor old Laycock, I had to send his private things on his way. He kept an hotel in Bradford. What had his head blown off? My officer asked me to write a letter and tell his wife how he died and this, that, and sent his things. I did. And she sent me a box of woodbines, 50 packets of woodbines. Just to come at the hotel, 50 packets of wine, to be distributed amongst his pals. That was a gift, that was. And if ever I went to Bradford, I was to be sure and go to her place, because I've never been since.
Is there anything else about the Passchendaele battle that you feel you could tell us about, Arthur? Anything else that impressed you?
Of course, when the real battle was on, there were some people killed there. Well, and drowned in the mud at night in the shell holes and all this sort of thing. Well, you can't realise it, really. If your new man had gone in that shell hole, you couldn't help him because you don't know where the edge is. You're liable to walk in yourself, you see. And he'd never get out and up with his equipment on, you see, and a rifle or whatever he'd got. Because that's where a lot of them skeletons are now.
Did it make much sense to you, that battle?
No, not any. I'll tell you another battle I was in. Battle of Arras, Easter Monday 1917. Cavalry made a charge. I tell you, my sister got a ring there, got Munchley bricks. That was the wrong place. I was leading the pack mules up this night. I was full corporal then. And OJ got the wind up because the cavalry cut him about. There was a shell come down as I was walking. That went down like that
right
in the ground.
Between your legs, yes.
And that was dead. That knocked me down. I went in mud, both arms. I couldn't get up. One was leading the first pack mule, because I hadn't got a pack mule, so I was leading away, you see. And he's called me B. He said, "Are you hurt, B?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "Bloody well, get up, you aren't." But I couldn't. I couldn't. Suction. So he helped me up. We stamping on up to Munch of the Pricks. There's horses laid about there what had been killed, and some run about with their bellies out, some on three legs. Some of them got a dead man hung up in the stirrup one side. That's Easter Monday 1917. That's the time when the Canadians took Vimy Ridge. Yeah.
Did you see anything of that? Did you see anything about Vimy Ridge?
We could see the Canadians going over. Oh yes, we could. Yeah, yeah.
What sort of sight was that?
Because they lost a lot of men, but they took the ridge. That was a fairly high ridge, as LJ could see every mortal thing all the way. They lost a lot of men, but they took it. And the cavalry took what was sent to take. They took it, but they lost a lot of men. A lot of horses, when they lost a rider, they kept galloping and went right over in German lines. That's how they're trained to keep going, you see. We lost some horses there.
You were saying about the Battle of Arras.
Yes, the Battle of Arras.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. What else did you experience of that?
Well, we went on several, well, what you call it, ordinary fronts, when they want too much doing, you see. That's what they ease you, get a little rest, I suppose that's what they meant. But the biggest deal was the first deal. Arras, the Somme, three times we say the Somme. Yes, I see, that's three times the Somme. Well, that was sharp fighting each time. But I think that retreat was the worst. Yeah, I mean, if you got wounded, say, and fell, you was taken prisoner, you see. Yeah. And he said, "Oh, gee, Lord, if you see a lay, Lord, put a bullet through you or stick a bayonet through you, see, or something like that." Yeah. Yes. We went down to a place called Villers Britnall, that's farther south, near some way down, to fire overhead barrage for the that's the first time the Americans made a big attack. Went down there, and I sat on some ground, got some mustard gas on, sat upon the flesh on my backside, mustard gas. They put overhead barrage for the Americans, and our artillery were doing what they call a creeping barrage for them. That's all done by the clock watch, if you like. The barrage keep creeping, you see. Well, the Americans thought that was Jerry's barrage. They went right in their own barrage. That's for lack of training, you see. They lost a lot of men. Our guns were firing overhead into our second line trenches, keep his head down, you see. That's Villers Britnall, that's the name of the place.
Did you see the Americans yourself?
Yes. Yeah, I got wrong with the American sergeant down there. I was coming out alone. I don't have to be alone. I run up against some American sergeant. He's in and coming out. He sat swearing at me. I'll tell you what, we'd got a lot of old soldiers what had been wounded and crippled, were patching the road up down there. Yeah. Because he said, "That's where the British Army is." He said, "Look," he said, "the men in the roads. British Army have been a-fighting here about 4 years, I suppose, and that was our first deal."
What did you say to him?
I swore I called him. Yeah?
What did you call him?
I called him everything. I won't tell you. No, I won't tell you. I let him know I didn't worry nothing about him. I mean, right? Because there's some of them come to us on our guns, he'd learn how to go on in the trenches. "Where's this goddamn shooting gallery?" They say, "You'll find out when before long." Yeah.
Did you get back on the guns, Arthur? Did you actually get back, on the machine guns?
Yes. Oh, yes, 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 yes. Yes. Yeah.
Where was that? What sort of front was it when you were on the machine guns?
Fairly quiet. Fairly quiet. Yes, 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 yes. Fairly quiet. Mm. But if you see, the men were trying to get the, well, the water, the grub and ammunition up. They wouldn't let them go on the gun if they could help it, you know. I mean,
that was more important.
Well,
to
yes,
get the
I mean, them
the
guns are no good up there unless you know what I mean, don't you? You got to get up there as well. I mean, if, yeah.
So that really was your main job, getting the rations.
Well,
and
that
water.
Was that's that was yes, yes. Yeah.
Did you get but very exhausted with it? Was it was it very exhausting work?
Some of it was. Some of it. Well, walking in mud, and you look in these. I mean, yeah, it might be a dead man down in that mud, you see, or bits of wood or anything. Down you go. Yeah, I expect you're getting tired of hearing me, aren't you?
Not at all. I'm wondering where you were when the war ended.
I was up in the Mons. Yeah, I can't tell you the name exactly.
Can you remember the armistice, how you heard about the end of the war?
All we had was ceasefire at 11 o'clock. Ceasefire at 11 o'clock. That's all we knew. We ought to stop where we were. And towards the afternoon, a whole lot of Australians come marching through. They were following Jerry right up on the Ryan. And instead of us going that way, after I suppose we laid in reserve for a short time, we come back up fair way.
Did you have a celebration when you knew the war was over?
The best celebration we had was Christmas dinner 1918. That was in a great big hut. And in the army, you see, on Christmas Day, the officers wait on the lower ranks, because we all sit each side, you know. We hadn't seen a plate, I mean, until then. They come out, dinner was off, you know, one each. They'd been getting the rum into them. The dinner slipped off the plate. If you were unlucky, I'd get one down your leg and neck. God, I don't know. That was a lovely dinner, though. But they were drunk, these officers were, you know. That's about the only thing we had a little bit of life.
But when the war actually ended, you know, the armistice in November 1918, when you heard the war was over, did you celebrate at all then?
No. We just stopped work, we'll say, where we was worn up.
How did you feel?
Well, I don't think it made much difference. We've been at it since the 9th of August, you know. I mean, when you got army advance, and if you're having a rest, you've got to keep moving to keep up, you see. Yeah. And if that's so you can't do it in daylight, well, you do it when it's dark. But I often think we must have been as tough as our nails. I didn't think so then, but I reckon one night killed me now.
Well, you still look pretty tough to me.
I'm only 89.
Could I ask you now, Arthur, if we could just go back, because you've taken us through your various experiences in the war very nicely, but if I could ask you a little more about the rations that you were taking up, and what was the system? Where did you get the rations from?
Well, they come from a long way back, a big dump, you see. They broke with lorries, because, you see, that's when lorries first come about, you see. They all had tired old lorries, they were. Well, they didn't take them up the line too close, they couldn't afford to lose them, you see. Well, we had to go down and fetch that. And then the quartermaster had sorted out, you see, bully beef, had biscuits, jam, a bit of butter sometimes, or mush. Yeah.
Did you have a shopping list?
No.
You just had to take what he gave
well,
you?
Well, he had to sort out whatever come up. The quartermaster did. Whatever come up, you see. He'd got four sections. So he used to put them in sandbags. Sandbags. Yeah.
What was the food like?
Well, our bully beef come from Argentina. bully, we used to call it. Sometimes they'd get sliced, you see, and sometimes they'd make a stew with it. And they had biscuits, they were big ones.
Oh, it's big, but as big as that.
One of my teeth.
That do for the whole day, you see. Hard, you've got to have good teeth. Because yeah. We used to get a rum issue, you see, when that's very cold. Mm. One spoonful, tablespoonful. If I went and drew rum, we'll say, for 20 men, we'll say, and 18 had it, and 2 didn't, there'd be 2 spoonfuls left. They had to be emptied out.
And was it?
One spoonful, you'd know you had it, you know. Yeah. They're afraid that what happened, you see, if they had too much, if you get old boys with loads of rifles and loads of revolvers, you could never tell. There used to be a lot of accidents happening, you see. Yeah.
How about jam? Did you have
Tickler's jam? That's right. I tried to think of that when I used to have Tickler's jam. Yes, yeah. Mm. McConaughey stole that. They were a tin of vegetables, potatoes, carrots, and different things. They were made at lost of McConaughey's. You had for one man, you know, this little. But round inside that, you see.
4 inches.
Yeah, very nice they were. Especially if you got a chance where it warm up a bit. Because it didn't happen very often. You had to be careful where you had a fire, you know. Yes. We was in a camp one night behind the line out for rest. Is that taking that down? Aylesbury ducks in this orchard. They're big ducks, Aylesbury's. Chap named Leonard, he comes from London, he comes to me, he said, Corporal. He says, I'm going to have one of them. Oh, he says, I don't care what you do, I don't even care what they've done. He picked up a bit of wood, a bit of length of poker. And I put a bit of big round of that. When they were waddling away, he flung that. That killed Till's dead doornail. Then he was in the muddle, he didn't know what to do with them. So I said, well, we got some wagons there. I said, pull one of them wagons forward, dig a hole, put the 2 ducks in, cover them up, pull the wagon back. He did. I think about midnight, where come an old French lady on in the swords with a British military policeman and a French policeman. There was another crowd of soldiers in the other corner. They'd got an old petrol tin with a top cut or boiling something, or cooking something, I would say. She went scrabbling across there. She stuck her hand right in this here blinking pot. She thought one of her ducks was in there. Because then this old police come and question me, you know. I didn't know nothing. Old Leonard said to me, he said, when we're going to move, he said, you let me know. So we had to dig them up and took them away. We had duck for dinner one day. I'd been buried.